Hello, this is Lawrence Bain, the voice of Cable from the X-Men animated series, and welcome to a special episode of Power of X-Men.
Familia, we have the Wild Man of Borneo on the podcast today. I am legit so excited. He was a regular on shows like Unsettled and Mohawk Girls, and a guest star on iconic shows like The Transporter, Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, RoboCop, and Nikita. He was the star of the Pink Floyd music video, Learning to Fly. His voice acting credits include Highlander, Gargoyles, among others. But most importantly, he voiced Cable, Corsair, Eric the Red in the X-Men animated series. With so much pleasure, do we welcome Lawrence Bain?
You guys are really going to test my blush response today, aren't you? All right. Great to be here. Thank you, Paul and Michelle, for having me. This has been a thing I've been working on since we were all told to go sit in a room and not be with anybody else. I started writing, but I also started thinking about when this passed that I would want to get out there and meet some of you crazy fans, because literally the craziest fan base I have, and I've had a few first from different aspects of my career, but the comics people, the X-Men people are just off the chain. You guys, crazy.
We can't help it.
I love it. I love it.
Well, Lawrence, the first exposure I had to the X-Men animated series was Slave Island and Cable and that iconic line, the Wild Man of Borneo. I say Borneo, it's Borneo, but
the Wild Man from Borneo.
Oh my God, that was so perfect.
Here, I got this off those Genosian goons. Thought you need them. Or something like that.
Sure. Okay, first of all, that was like our first listener question. That literally was the first listener question that came in, was for you to say that iconic line. So you thank go. You so much.
Okay.
You have blessed us.
You have blessed us and the X-Men community.
Go in peace, child. Yes.
Lawrence, we are going to be diving into quite a few questions, but we got to ask. We got to ask a big question here. Yeah. X-Men 97. What can you tell us?
Okay. It pains me. It pains me to give you this 7-word answer. Yes, I'm in it. I can't talk.
That's fair. That's fair enough.
Yeah, I'm definitely there. But when you get a 24-page NDA booklet from the mouse, you take it seriously. So yes. I have recorded an episode. So I am on X-Men 97. Everything else, nope. Can't tell you.
Okay. Well, you said a episode. So.
I did a episode. That's
okay.
Correct.
We're here.
I don't want it to be the only episode, though. You know what I mean? So.
That's true. That's true. We need more. We need more Cable and more Eric Cable. The Red.
Well, that, you see, you're saying names, and I'm just saying I did a character.
We need more.
Need more. We need more Lawrence. Lawrence.
I need more of me, too. That would be great.
Lawrence, we have to ask, were you also a comic book fan growing up?
Yeah, I'm going to bitterly disappoint you with that, though. I was a comic book fan, but my favorite was Casper and Richie Rich.
Yes! You know what the fan theory is out there, right? That Casper is the ghost of Richie Rich.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, the animation, the drawings were pretty, pretty much the same. And, really a dead millionaire kid? Yeah, come on. That's just so newsworthy.
Haunting his mansion.
Yes, haunting his mansion.
Did you see the movie with Christina Ricci back in like 1994?
I did, and I enjoyed it. I'll be telling you that I did. I dug Casper because... Well, the whole idea of being a friendly ghost is kind of interesting. I've never played good guys, generally. Generally, they're not good guys. So Casper was a good guy, and he scared people, which I also like.
Lawrence, how did you become a voice actor?
I have a big mouth, and I love the sound of my own voice.
Well, we love the sound of your own voice too. Well, so.
We do.
So what happened is I had a wonderful agent who I retired, 19 years. Carrie Fullis was my agent. And I started badgering her one day about voice work, anything, like commercials mostly was what I was kind of interested in going for. And I was bugging her. I want to get into voice work. And so she called another friend of long association now, Kim Herden, who's a voice casting agent. And oddly, Kim said to my agent, is he cute? And I don't know what that had to do with voice, but my agent said, yeah, in a wasted Iggy Pop kind of way. You have to remember this was 35 years ago and I was a little thinner. So I went down and I did my first voice audition for Hyundai and I got it. And then I got the next one and the next one. And I was all of a sudden hot and rolling. And literally the X-Men was probably fourth or fifth audition that I did for them. I think I was already on Redwall at that point doing voices. There was one that was, it was biblical. It was also directed by Dan Hennessy from X-Men, but it was all about Bible stories, which was hilarious because a lot of the actors on that were also ne'er-do-wells from the X-Men and Don Franks and some other notables. And we'd all be, you know, acting out these biblical stories. And there was a bishop, an archbishop in the control room, you know, monitoring us. And we're godless actors. I don't mind telling you. it was in there because, you know, we get around to testing the mics and I'd be going test 666 just to mess with the guy. He had a great sense of humor. I ended up playing Hercules, a couple of the disciples and stuff like that. But that would probably be the only place where I played good guys ever. And to go back to your story, once I got the X-Men, I was off in the animation world. You know, a lot of things came after that and during it, because that was a long phase. I got my dad the rock star. Gene Simmons hired me from KISS for that. And I did his cartoon voice for 58 episodes. And that was the hardest voice I ever did because he yelled all the time.
I love that so much.
Yeah, he yelled all the time. This guy, hey, Willie, rock and roll. Ah! You know, so that went on until I was hoarse a great deal of the time.
I'm obsessed with KISS, but I'm also obsessed with the moniker that your friend gave you, which is Wasted Iggy Pop. Like, how does one get a moniker like that? Like, how much drugs and alcohol are you doing to get that? And how do I become you in my next life?
You don't want to be that. I was thin. I had black hair. I loved Iggy Pop. In fact, true story, I walked into the Franz restaurant, which is an all-night restaurant in Toronto, and it was at College and Yonge Street, right downtown. And I walked in there at 3 a.m, somewhat wasted, and ran into Iggy Pop sitting there. And we sat down and had a wasted talk for about 3 hours. I don't remember a damn thing I said. Probably he wouldn't either. But I talked to Iggy Pop for about 3 hours as we both... He was working off a performance high, and I was just working off a high. So,
well, listen, I love you so much. I want to just party with you. I'm sorry. I said that. We said that to Lenore Zan, too.
Lenore was a partier in her day. Whoops, hey.
Can we all have a party? Can we get a Zoom party going?
Oh, my God. We had one of the best Zoom parties. Well, when we hooked him to a lawyer in LA who was explaining to us about the 24-page NDA. We went for sensitivity training, and a lot has changed, my God. You know, a lot of it is for the better, but sometimes I think the pendulum is going to swing a little too far. But we had a great time, but for the first time in years, there's like six of us who hadn't talked to each other, and we were almost ignoring the lawyer while we were wisecracking each other. I mean, you get Cal Dodd in the mix, and it's just over anyway. But Cal and me and Norm, may you rest in peace, back in the day, man, the studio was fun because we used to work ensemble. You know, you'd walk into a dead room and there'd be eight mics, four facing the other four. And it would be us jamming and riffing. It was, that was the way to do cartoons. When I went down to L.A. and did Gargoyles, I'm sitting right beside Jonathan Frakes. And yeah, oh, well, big deal, Jonathan Frakes. But no. The guy who voiced Slimer on that guy. I'm going to remember his name because he was God to me and still is. Oh, who was he? Somebody look that up.
I forgot. Well, first of all, I forgot that Slimer existed until I watched the original Ghostbusters the other night. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved Ghostbusters growing up.
Frank Welker.
Okay, Ray, there you go. I was Googling it as we were doing it.
Frank Welker. Yeah. And I walked into any Trekkie would have just, blown apart in an orgasm if they'd walked into this room. Because there were just Trekkies everywhere. So the Trek cast was almost there. Everybody but Picard was there to do this cartoon. And I'm looking at this, oh, yeah, Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis. And I'm like, yeah, the Star Trek cast. And then I got to Frank Welker, and I went, Frank Welker? Like, out loud. And the guy, one of the engineers goes, oh, you know Frank? I go, well, I know of him. The guy's a god. He's a voice god. And that's why I wanted to be with him. So quick fan thing, when I was a fan, like going, holy Christ, Frank Welker, he walks in and I'm like, man, I got to say hello. I got to say congratulations on your work. You know, your body of work is amazing stuff. And he goes, you're Canadian, aren't you? And I said, yeah, he said, you're so polite. I said, well, don't fucking hold on to that for too long. Right? And he laughed and we're sitting down beside each other. And at the end, he was doing what Frank does and what I have ended up doing a great deal of time is doing utility voices at the end of all the main voices. You know, crowd running, blah, 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 some guy just yelling out one thing. So Frank was always doing those. I'm proud to say that's what I do when I'm generally on a series is that I'll go in and they'll let me clean up or do three or voices or impact sounds or screams or whatever. There's a three-headed monster to be voiced at the end. And Frank says, do you want to go high and squeaky or low and rumbly? And I'm not, and I realize he's asking me to join him in doing this thing that they've given him. And I'm like, wow, like total fanboy. I lost it. I went, holy shit, really, Frank? And he's like, yeah. So you go low. So he goes, now go high and squeaky. So we go back and forth between these two things. And we come up with this three-headed monster. And I shared that with Frank Welker. And that's a fanboy moment for me.
Oh, I love that so much.
That's so cool.
Okay, wait. I want to circle back on this Zoom reunion you had for work.
Yes, we're going to need some details on this.
Okay. I think the details, it came down to, we were being told a lot of things that, intrinsically.
But who was on it?
Okay, Adrian Huff was on it.
Love Adrian.
Cal Dodd was on it. You? Oh, God, see now. Natasha? No. Jolie, maybe. See, this will come back like Frank Rucker as we go along.
Don't worry. When it comes back, come back. But that's incredible that you all had that reunion. I love that you have like an HR meeting and you guys are the cool kids in the office. You are just like, oh gosh, that makes us so happy.
I think we just started ignoring her after a while because I think I wrapped it, sort of brought it to a sort of a natural end by saying, you are saying stuff here to avoid that we've always avoided. You're telling us to do stuff here we've always done. Said, so, this cast worked together ensemble. So there was no disrespect. And had there been anybody, we would have corrected it ourselves.
Yeah.
Now, the whole Disney thing is, well, if you see that, report it. You know what? If you get in my face, I'm in your face. I'm not going, he hit me. I'm not doing that. I'll hit you back myself. And, and I'll stand up for somebody else in that room, too. And that entire cast would. If you want heroic people doing heroic voices, you bagged it with these people. Yes. Every last one of them.
Oh, my God. The hype is real. I'm so excited.
Okay. Well, speaking of hype, though, we need to find out about that Pink Floyd music video. I mean, and you look, okay, first of all, in the comic books, Cable has an alternate universe counterpart called Nate Gray, right? Gotcha. There. Mm-hmm. And you look identical to Nate Gray in that video. I am obsessed with this. Like, I had raccoon eyes last night just rewatching this video over and over.
Oh my God, man.
Tell us about Pink Floyd.
Okay.
However you want to say it.
This is a story I've told before, but I'll try to get it down to maybe 3 minutes. Yeah. Saturday morning, Toronto, so long ago, woke up with a friend of mine who decided to crash at my house because he couldn't drive. And we woke up and it was about 9 and we were stunningly hungover. I have a backyard sort of upstairs patio hangs out the window and we were sitting out there. And the phone rang and it was my brand new agent. That was Margot Lane. I think Margot's since gone out of business. But it was my first agent. I had nothing. I went in there with a lie of a resume and everything else. And they sort of put me on the shelf. Went, yeah, we'll call you. Anyway, I didn't think they'd call me on a Saturday hungover and say, would you like to go to, it's a video audition. And I'm like immediately, not really. I think I did an earlier audition or earlier video with somebody with another band in Toronto. And it was just a lot of work and nonsense and ego. But this was... I said, what, for what? And they go, well, it's for Pink Floyd. And my friend hears that because we're there. He's going, you're going. Well, you're fucking going. You're going. Like, and I'm like looking at him going, my eyes are bleeding, man. I am so hungover. He goes, you got to go. So I go. The great big waiting room. There are at least 100 people in it. There are a lot of children, like about, you know, yay high. And there are a lot of children's mothers, and they're even more annoying. And then there's guys dressed up in aviator costumes. And then there's a few guys I recognize to look like indigenous folks. I mean, they're not asking for us to dress in period or anything, but they are looking for some indigenous actors. I noticed a couple of them there. I wait, and I wait, and I wait. And my skull is breaking, and it's just terrific in this room. So I finally got called in, and I went in, and there's almost as many people in there. There's like 20 people behind a table, like the Last Supper, looking out at me. And I went into a mime lean. I used to be a mime. And I went into a lean and I was just standing there. And then I started to fake drink. And then somebody said to Storm Thorgerson, the director, Storm, look. And he looked over and goes, what are you doing? I said, leave it. And I tossed the empty glass, fake glass at him. And I walked out. He called me the next day. He said, would you come down to the hotel? I'm like, the hotel? What is this? So I go and I meet Storm Thorgerson. Now, I don't know if you know Storm. He designed most of the Yes albums.
Oh.
He's an incredible illustrator, an incredible, a raconteur of the arts. And so I go to his hotel room and he says, I need to see you run down the hall. Wait, got that in the wrong order because this is good. He says, we're going to do a couple of exercises here. I said, okay. He says, so here's the key to my room. You're going to leave and you're going to come back in like it's your room. And then you're going to notice me, a stranger, in your room. Okay.
All right. That's a great acting prompt.
And I come back and he's sitting very obviously in my eye line when I walk in, but I ignore him. I go over to his fridge and I open it up and I pour myself a shot of Jack Daniels and I haul that back. Then I turn and I see him and I throw the keys at his head. And he ducks the keys and he goes, all right, now I want to see you run down the hallway. So you want to see me run down the hallway? So I ran down the hallway and I didn't return. Just kept going. And he hired me the next day.
Yes.
And off we were to Calgary. Off we were to Calgary. First time on a plane. It's called Learning to Fly. First commercial airplane I ever took. When I got there, there was a biplane, as you may have seen in some of the scenes. I got to go up in that biplane and do dead man's roles while the CBS executives were down on the ground and going, that's the talent up there. They didn't care. I didn't care. And then I was in a helicopter and we were flying up to 3,000 feet to shoot the scene where I tossed the jacket off. And yeah, man, it was done in 3 days. We came back to Toronto and I got backstage passes to all three Pink Floyd shows down at the Lakeshore. And that was it. I got that video back in my possession and I got a real agent and I started to get some real work after that.
And I was reading an interview you did with a Pink Floyd site. Apparently, there was a different version of the video that was.
There is a different version out there still. Yes,
available for a second, and then it was gone.
Yeah, they had it up for a while. That didn't. It was one that didn't feature me, and it had all these. Now this goes back to the audition where I saw all these kids. You know what these kids were? They were swimmers, top swimmers. There's a video out there. They put lights underneath a lake in a rock quarry in Northern Ontario. And they had these kids doing high dives, like 10 meter dives off the top of the quarry and into the water. And it was all filmed and it was beautiful stuff. and yet they decide to go with some guy using a scythe very badly in the middle of the prairie instead. So it was surprised me, I can tell you.
Gross.
Beautiful stuff, though. Beautiful stuff. I don't understand why they couldn't come up with a hybrid of both videos, but I'm very happy the way it turned out.
Listen, we're happy that you were there front and center.
Gosh. All right. Well, speaking of how things came to be, mm-hmm. how did you land the role of Cable in X-Men?
I'm not certain. It's not because I have huge rips of, you know, holes in the fabric of my memory, because I do. It's just that I'm not certain that I got Cable through any other thing than showing up one day because I was doing another voice and they went, try this one. And I tried it. You know, as spectacular as these things have turned out to be and rewarding for people and to follow and stuff like that, you got to know that us grunts on the ground doing it, sometimes it's like part of like five things you're doing that day. And as much as I'd love to recall all sorts of juicy details, I'm not sure how I got Cable. I just know that I went in, I read, I remember Dan Hennessy saying, just do you, man, just do you, right? Don't put on a voice, don't do anything. He said, but the lower register stuff, just give us the lower register stuff. So we went down there and we did the audition. But you know what? I don't recall doing an audition per se. I think they just said, you're Cable. It's like on Nikita. When I got Nikita, I was just called in by the producer, Jamie Rock. He said, you are this guy. And I like that. That happened a couple of times to me. That's a point of pride with me when it comes to dealing with directors and producers and writers who know your work and what you can do. And they just naturally, you know, give it to you. That's lovely
stuff.
They
just trust you.
Yeah. I need to ask about Nikita, though. Sidebar, it's not on our outline. But did you work with Melinda Clark, a.k.a. Julie Cooper from the OC?
I think I did. Now you have to remember that I was just a hired gun from operations there. No, I didn't work with her directly. I had enough fun dealing with PETA. That was fun.
But okay, so they're like, okay, you're Cable, go lower, you're Cable. Were you like, who the fuck is Cable?
I didn't know who Cable was. I thought Cable was a thing, just like you guys did before I knew it was a guy.
You're like, is there pay-per-view as well?
You're predating that. Remember when this happened, you know, I think like two of us had cell phones at the time.
But, okay, but that is insane. That's Zach Morris level.
Yeah.
That's how cool you guys were.
No, we loved it. I think we knew we were onto something about, you know, 10 episodes in. We realized that we were doing something that was different, that it was a little more, I don't know, adult. At least it wasn't pandering. And that impressed us all.
But were they like, you are Scott and Jean Grey's son for the future? Did they, no. they didn't give you like a little bio or anything?
I remember the one thing I was told was that I was not a mutant and that I was a mercenary.
Okay.
And that I may or may not have liked mutants. Now, remember, voice acting, besides knowing your character, is being able to fit into the time you have to say it. Very often, this comes into play, especially when you're voicing like Japanime, where you voice... And that has to be all in there. And it sort of might move with the mouth, but generally it doesn't. On this one, we were told that they were going to do the art to us.
Oh.
No, that there was going to be, you know, we would say the stuff and then the character, they would make then those, you know, provisions for mouth movements, O's, E's, A's, S's. So we were allowed to speak in a way that was kind of... new at that point in animation. We were just acting, and the best thing about this acting, of course, was that you didn't really have to be off book because no one was looking at you. You could just read your script, but there's no discount on that from acting. You have to know how to act to be able to read cold and to pull cold words off of an awful script and bring them alive in the space of a minute or two is quite something. I did live plays in Toronto, live radio plays in the CBC back in the day, and you couldn't muff those. Like, there was no take two. So I think most of us in that area learned how to act into a microphone before a great deal of people sort of, you know, glommed onto it.
So you already kind of touched on your approach to cable, how it was very like organic, how everything was animated to like what you said and your inflection.
Vocal stylings?
Stylings. Stylings. Was there any other approach that you took with Cable, like not really knowing too much about his backstory?
I like to not know about the backstory a great deal of the time. That's me. I'm sure that's a quirk that I have. Other actors really delve into it and stuff. I like to rely on the writing, and the writing was superb. So, you know, when the words jump off the page at you, it just makes your job so much easier because you're not having to think backstory, because you're not trying to apply some meaning that isn't already clearly written there in the words. Now, you know, I was asked in interviews years ago, did you guys get to, you know, improv and stuff like that? And the answer is absolutely not. Did not get to improv a grunt. You know, you had to, it had to all be run by everyone. And we weren't even allowed to do alt takes back then. They had alt takes for us sometimes. But now I'm working on another animated series. I don't know if I can mention it either. It's going to be cool. It's adult oriented, and okay. It's timely.
It's timely.
So
Invincible.
I mean, really timely. I mean, banners rolling on your news screen right now. Timely. It's going to be great when it comes out.
Okay, we're excited for that.
That guy that's on there required a lot of work because I had to come up with a backstory for them. And this, what I was getting at, sorry, was that on this new animated series, I get to do an alt. I get to say, can I do an alt on that? With, you know, shape it a little bit, whatever. It's great when they allow you to collaborate, but as you have to be malleable as an actor to know that they're not going to let you collaborate on everything, and you can't pout and stomp your feet and go, I want to try it. You've got to do your job. And if your job is to turn, you know, something mediocre into something fabulous, and they won't let you change the word, that's on you. You know, you got to do that. If that makes our job harder, I'll tell you. But when the script's good, you can make it excellent. When the script's excellent, you don't deviate from the script. You don't have to, you know?
Okay, but you're going to touch upon a question I wanted to ask, and I forgot to include it in the script. Speaking of good scripts, what was it like working with the Lewalds and Larry Houston? I mean, they were phenomenal on the show. I mean, they're phenomenal in general, but they nailed it 100. There's a reason why X-Men is coming back. There's a reason why it endured as long as it did.
Well, the whole reason why the X-Men came back at all, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I didn't work with them personally. Larry Houston, of course, you know, I had directors in Toronto, and they were on the horn to other people. And that dialogue wasn't as open back then as it is now. When I work on animation now, I've got, like you guys, up here, and I can talk to anybody who wants to give me input. Back in the day, Dan Hennessy did all the directing. And we didn't hear what the other folks had to say, but we sure as hell agreed with everything Dan said. So, I mean, he was a fantastic, fantastic director. One of my favorite directors ever. Just intuitive and would make you do an entire line again, and you'd swear it sounded the same, and then you'd listen to it back and go, no, that's what he wanted me to hit, that one right there, you know? And that is a sign of a good director. Hmm. One of many, but that's, yeah, when he gets you to hit a little flavor or a note that you didn't hit, and you do it, and you realize he just got it out of you just so naturally, that's a pleasure, man.
Hmm.
Were you surprised at how big Cable's story became on the show?
Astounded. I was. I thought, okay, he's got a couple of shots in here. But then, you know what? I went to the Silver Snail comic store here in Toronto, and I looked, and there's Cable on, you know, a couple of covers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, okay, this guy's big in the comics world.
Well, especially in the 90s. He was huge.
Yeah, like, all those pouches.
And I'm even forgetting when he was debuted, when he debuted in the series, had it been answered that he was Scott and Jean's son. I think at one point, Michelle, you can correct me if I'm wrong, at one point it was theorized he could have been an older Cannonball in the comics. So it was a question mark on his identity.
Yep. I, like I said, the only prompting I got about how did what he was that he was a mercenary, and he was not a mutant.
And by the way, mercenary is such an operative word. I learned the word mercenary from the show. And every time I think of a mercenary, I've included the word in a lot of my writings because I think of Cable in that episode, who went to the hills and started a revolution. Like,
I think he's just great because he stays his own guy through the whole thing. I mean, when he squared off with Captain America and Wolverine squared off, that was an epic day in the studio, because I was just Cal and me riffing away, and that was fun to do. Obviously, an iconic character like Captain America, even if it was a one-off, but it was great fun doing that stuff.
We have questions of Captain America. Trust me, you got there first. But when you look back on Cable, you're happy with that? I mean, originally, he, in Beyond Good and Evil, that was supposed to be the series finale. He was a focal point of that story. I mean, he had the heart story there because he was trying to save Tyler, his son.
Well, you know, your comic universe is such a shifting and ephemeral thing. You know, Cable could come back. Any of them could come back. Any of them could be reintroduced. And certainly they're being realigned, and they're being streamlined, and they're being re-realized. And that's the beauty of your world there, guys. I love it. I mean, you know, you never die. I mean, and I've got a death reel that's like 10 minutes long. You know, I've been killed. I've been killed in every way and place and imaginable in my career, but I'm still here. So Cable, why not? Why not?
Why not?
Yep.
Well, we've got time travel and resurrection now, so we can just bring back anybody.
There we go.
Anytime.
Yep. Yeah, Cable's died like 100 times in the comics.
Yeah, I know. Or he's always got like a new issue every time he comes back, and it's like, damn, Cable, like, can you catch a break? Like,
I can play that new issue. I can play that new issue thing.
Oh,
that's for sure.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you mentioned that you and Cal got to collaborate a bunch, but who was your favorite cast member to work with?
Oh, I liked Norm. Norm was a scoundrel. Norm and I were scoundrels. Norm was fun. In studio, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better family. I mean, seriously, there were no rusty bolts in there. Everybody was playing nice with each other and having a good time. Some of us would go and continue the good time later at the Betty Ford.
I want to know who was the biggest party animal.
I feel like
Lenore may have said you and Cal.
Lenore could party herself too, but she had a responsible streak in her, and
she's gone on to do a lot of
you can't abide the responsible streaks in people, so.
Okay, but I love the idea of Cable, Wolverine, and Rogue partying and having a great time.
It's quite a sight. I remember we did it once. We had an X-Men party at the end of the season, and we were down at a rather nice hotel on the lakeshore. And yes, we got fun. We all got fun.
Okay, well, you did so many voiceovers in the series. When I was looking at your IMDb, you actually started off doing things ahead of Cable. I couldn't really identify your voices. Were you just doing general work?
I was doing utility voices. That's why I say I don't remember auditioning for Cable. I just remember Dan having me in to do that stuff, and then him saying, do this one. Mm-hmm. And that was a test. That's what I did. I did a test for him. He said, okay, all right. Then I came back in the next night. He went, you're the man. You're Cable. So, yeah. And, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Lawrence, you also got to do the voice of Corsair on the Starjammers, who also happens to be Cable's grandfather.
This is where you guys know, like, 10 times more shit than I do. Like, I'll tell you something about Corsair too, and I'd love to tell you how I did it and what I did. It was one day for me.
Really?
I'm pretty sure it was one day of work for me. And if you're going to ask me to remember that after the oceans of Jack Daniels and everything else afterwards,
stop it. Lawrence, you're making me so thirsty. I'm trying to have a sober week here. And now I just want to fly to Toronto and take you out. Michelle and I did an event with Larry Houston at her comic book store. We took Larry out to drink.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards. We got him a couple beers.
And who survived that the best?
I feel like we all did. I had to drive, so I only had one.
I probably had like eight because Michelle's driving.
Just warming up. Yeah.
Larry was very responsible, of course.
We didn't live too far, so that was also good.
And it was like a California Pizza Kitchen. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, California Pizza Kitchen or CPK.
CPK. We'll take it to CPK.
Take it to CPK. Right. We'll do a happy hour.
You'll be like, I'm fine.
But you think we're joking. We're serious.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Call me along.
I was just talking to one of the writers on the X-Books, and I was like, man, my flight to Vancouver, I had like five bottles of wine, but the flight, in-flight bottles of wine. Yeah. Because it was like a 6-hour flight. And I'm like, I'm so bored on this plane. What am I going to do? And the flight attendant just kept giving me bottles of wine. I arrived. I was so dehydrated. Uh-huh. But circling back to Michelle's question about you did it in one day. So how did they come to you? They're like, just do Corsair. We already have
Corsair. It was generally I'm in studio and they're it's not just me, of course. I mean, they hand these things out to everybody, you know, a utility voice here, do this, do that, do this, do this. I mean, Norm Spencer probably got the shortest shrift of that because Norm is so Norm. He sounds like Norm. And, you know, he had a license plate that said VOC002. You know why? Because he was the second voiceover artist in Toronto recognized for commercials and stuff. He did 1,000 commercials a year. Like, he was the guy. Everybody wanted to, you know, have a chunk of Norm's pie, but he was the guy.
Well, you know, the one thing that reading everything the Lewalds have written about the animated series, the one thing they prioritized were they wanted actors first and foremost when it came to that. People were very professional. Something that I think you touched upon earlier in the episode, it unheard of for voice acting. And when I'm thinking of what you've told me about Norm, what Lenore has told us from what Larry and the Lewalds have told us, it makes sense that all of this talent was converging on this series. And by the way, I love that they got Cable, who was like in a Pink Floyd video, who was absolutely wasted Iggy Pop. Like, that for me is so telling and how they had that keen eye for talent and who would be good for a voice. That I don't know who the voice director was, or the voice casting director.
It would be Dan.
Dan, literally, he just nailed it.
He nailed us all. Yeah, he did.
Really, when I read comics, I hear Cal's voice. I hear your voice. I hear Lenore's voice.
Yeah.
Catherine's voice for Jean is always.
Well, you know, Cal did beat me out for Wolverine, you know, so there was that.
I was going to say, you have like a very like Wolverine-esque like.
I auditioned for Wolverine as well. And Cal did. And it was out there floating around for weeks. Like, who's got it? Who's got it? And they finally went with Cal. And I went, okay, fine. Best man win. Now, Cal is an amazing singer. I'm an okay singer. I got a band. Cal's been singing and doing his shit for years. The next big audition we went out for was My Dad, the Rock Star, for the same role. And Cal went into the audition and sang his guts out for them. And I said, I went in and did the audition, you know, the screaming, hey, rock and roll and all that stuff. And they said, can you sing a song? I said, yeah, I'll sing a song, but in a band. I'm not going to sing here. It's nonsense. And they said, well, actually, we'll probably have other people singing your role. And I said, not if I get the role. I sing, so I'm going to have the role and the singing. And they sent this back to Gene Simmons, and Gene said, put him in a studio and record him. So they recorded me singing rock and roll all night and party every day. And Gene said he's hired. And then I went up to Cal and said, you got Wolverine, I got Rockstar. And I know Cal wanted that one too. So, you know, and we're buds, totally buds, because, you know, in this business, you know, hanging on to bitterness and all that stuff is like cancer. You can't have it in your system. And Cal and I are great buds. So, that's an old story, though, about, you know, me. I was on the cusp of Wolverine too. And then he got it. And I was like, yeah, it's a life changer. yeah, it's a life-changing role to get. So, you know, good on him. And yeah, it's a good biz, man.
Yeah. Well, you also got to voice Eric the Red. Do you remember
Eric was kind of Weedly, wasn't he? Wasn't he kind of Weedly?
Yeah.
And so he's got, I don't remember him that well, but I remember he just sneered and
yeah.
Right? And no, I liked him. I liked Eric. I liked Eric because I thought he was a goof, for one thing. You know, I don't think he made a right move. Like one.
He had an outfit, that's for sure.
The outfit got commented on. Yeah. My mother commented on it. You'd wear an outfit like that. I'm like,
Yas, wear Eric the Red, please. What are you here for? That must have been like such a busy week for you, though. I mean, you're doing Corsair.
It wasn't spread over. I mean, they were busy days with those things, man. We were in there, you know, all told sometimes for 4 hours every session. So they were grueling sessions. I mean, of course, we got paid nicely, but after about two hours, when you're working on your voice, you're actually aware. You become aware that you're working your voice.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to parse it out. You have to time it out so it's going to last to the end. This is why when you go in to do this stuff, you save all that noisy shit to the end, like impact sounds. And whenever you do an impact sound or a running sound or a screaming sound or a panting sound, you do a short one, a medium, and a long one. So the first scream is, ah, you know, second scream is, ah, and the third scream is, ah. And you got to do that until they're happy with it. And impacts for me were the worst. I did Street Fighter and was, you know, we had three gentlemen from Japan on the line, and they were talking to a translator telling me how to better go oof and ah. So, and that was about an hour. And at the end of that, dust. Wow. Nothing. No voice. No.
Yeah. Well, as a Street Fighter stan, I thank you for your tireless work.
Yes.
There. Thank you. But so the X-Men animated series wasn't your only dive into the X-Men world. You were also on this very short-lived, I think relatively unknown among X-Stans, TV series called Mutant X.
Yeah. And I just watched that the other day, as a matter of fact. That was fun. Fun to do.
It was kind of like reminiscent of like the Xena and Hercules style of television back in the day.
If you mean special effects and sets, yeah, you're right. Just a little questionable. A good friend of mine directed me on that, Bruce Pittman. Again, I didn't get hired for that. He just said, I didn't audition for that. He said, you're going to play this guy. He's psionic. You know, he can read other people's minds and stuff like that. I added all these, you know, physical glitches when I was reading someone's mind, and it was all accepted. So I had a good time on that. Yeah, it was a hoot. It was a hoot.
Did he know that you were Cable in the anime?
He did. Yeah, Bruce. Bruce, the director, knew that he was. He goes, well, we'll ride on that, man. We'll ride on that because, you know, you're an X-Men cartoon. Now I'm putting you in X-Mutants. You know, got a whole career ahead of you.
You also did the voice for Charles Xavier in the Mutant Academy video game. What was that process?
I think it was a clipped voice, and the process was to not sound, I believe, too overblown and heroic. It was to sound professorial. It was to sound sort of academic. How I got there with the grade 9 education, I have no idea, but I did it. I think you just speak in clipped tones. It was barely, you know, it was on sort of a cusping on an English sort of accent. But again, it was just more, I think I probably might have borrowed a little bit from Cedric on that for sure, you know.
Okay. But in terms of video games, though, you were in one of the most iconic Capcom versus X-Men video games ever done. You were in Marvel versus Capcom 2, where you returned as Cable. And I need to know every excruciating detail about your process here, because Michelle and I are both obsessed with this video game. I think about it all the time. I try to post about it every single day of my life. You also did the announcer for it. Are you the one who said, I almost had a heart attack? Was that you?
I think that might have been me, yeah.
I cannot believe you did that voice. Like, you have no idea. That I have such a weird relationship with that line because I was a nervous kid. So when I would play the game and be like, almost had a heart attack, I'm like, I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to have a panic attack. And now it's like my jam to be like, almost had a heart attack. So please, I'm sorry. I am fanboying out too much right now. Just tell us the entire process of Marvel versus Capcom 2. I'm only asking you to give me to remember every single minute.
I know, and you know what? Project. I can't do it, man.
No! Like, fuck you, Jack Daniels. Fuck the Jack Daniels.
You send a hypnotist up here, and they put me under, and they can take me back there. I might be able to tell you, but it's the method is no different than anything else I did. So to give you precious information that would somehow differ from other work I did, I don't think I have it, man. I think more often than not with video games, the script is, it's written in stone for one thing, and you've got you have time constraints. It has to be said within this amount of time, or it you have to say it again. So when you're first warming up to that, it's a little difficult because the first thing the actor wants to do is act. And the second thing that the actor wants to do is continue to work. So the idea that I had to do this stuff to a time constraint is an actor working. It's not me acting, man. So that's why the memory isn't as clear of doing things like games. And yeah, it's because at that point, you know, you're working within these constraints. You have fun in the studio in X-Men, and they'll go, you know, hey, try to speed it up a little, guys. And you go, yeah, we're in the gym. We're in the jam. We can do it. We can do it. We can do it again. But I found doing voices for video games, and I still do. The last one I did was Far Cry 5, and I was, you know, an indigenous guide on that. And I still had to sound like the calm indigenous man. But some of these, you know, the time limits that I had to say them turned it back into work. So it wasn't games and stuff like that. It's not, that's not as much fun. That's not as much acting as it is knowing how to act and then working. If you know what I mean.
No, I got you. I got you there.
Yeah. Circling back to something you touched on earlier, we have to ask about doing Captain America's voice. What was it like embodying such an iconic character like Captain America?
Well, you know, as a Canadian, you start to worry about, you know, saying a boot and stuff, eh? And sounding like a Canadian, which was never a problem with me, never thought it was a problem with me until I got into the voice gig and a couple of really good directors over the years. Ted Rosnick, Deborah Toffin, some really good voice people said, you've got to find that standard, bland, middle American accent. That's what we call you guys up here, bland. Anyway, it's not true. It's not true. But you have to blandify the American accent so that you can be not Canadian. So, I mean, I don't think I ever had it. I was told from the earliest time I was an actor that I sounded like I was from New York. You know,
I see that.
People say, you sound like you're from you know, New York. I can do that. If you want me to do that, I can do that. But that's not me. But talking like a tough guy, I've been doing that since grade six. So maybe that's what they were talking about. But once that was figured out, Captain America came pretty easily because I was going, all I got to do is not sound Canadian.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. that was
so good.
How did you just turn it on like that? We weren't even expecting that.
It's there. It's there. It's in your DNA after a while. Sometimes I forget that I've made a voice. And then I hear it and go, holy Christ, I did that. I did that for 3 hours. I did that. Wow. Like, I forget them too. You know, I'm this other show I'm working on that I can't tell you about yet. I have so far voiced 5 different voices on it. And that for me, man, I am from the Frank Welker, Mel Blanc school. That I want to do as many as possible. And I want to put my imprimatur on them so that they're mine. To do a long while ago, probably about 20 years ago, somebody was casting for a voice in Toronto, and they used a sample of my voice as an example of what to sound like. And a friend of mine came out and went, they're using your, and he saw me on the street, said, I just went to an audition and they used a tape of your voice for us to copy. And I went, who, when, where? Told my agent. Agent goes, phones the person, goes, stop now or hire him. Hired. I
mean, yeah.
Woo! Well, that's exactly why wouldn't they hire you?
Yeah.
But yeah, my point too. I just don't know. I thought I was at that arc of my career. This is the arc of the actors. Like, who's Lawrence Bain? Get me Lawrence Bain. Get me a cheaper Lawrence Bain. Get me somebody who sounds like Lawrence Bain but isn't Lawrence Bain. That's the arc of a voice career if you're really unfortunate. But sometimes it works out that you sound like you and you're the only one who can do you. That's what I want to be, you know?
Well, Lawrence, you being you has left such a lasting impression on so many people in our community. We solicited a few listener questions. Everyone wanted you. We got an insane amount of people who wanted to hear the line, the wild man of Borneo. So thank you for that. I mean, we got like seven people asking for that. And one of them is a regular on the podcast named Flinkman. So shout out to Flink because he...
Hey, Blink.
So one of the listener questions we got in was, which character did you find easiest to voice? And I guess this is in the context of the X-Men animated series.
Okay, well, you do some voices and they're easy because, you know, they don't test your range. You're not yelling and screaming a lot. So if you want my favorite voice, I would have to be Eric the Red because it was like a very charactery, snivelly, and that was more fun for me. And what's difficult about doing yourself is the urge every now and then to, you know, gloss it up, you know, to shiny it up or make it to give it some drama that it doesn't need. You know, if you're centered in your voice, and Cable was just me in a lower register, and I found that fairly easy to do, except, you know, when the adrenaline hypes you up and it pushes the pitch of your voice up and you're going, holy shit, I got to keep it down. And then if you don't do that, if you don't work on that, it sounds fake. You really have to have the voice in the basement for it to work. And it can't all of a sudden do that. It's just got to stay in the basement. So for me and Cable was a zen motherfucker. You know, Cable was zen, and he was upset and he killed people. But like, look at the guy. Does he have to yell? No, he doesn't have to yell. You just got to get out of my way.
Oh my god!
I minimized the screen just so I can hear it. And that, oh my god, I can't right now. Michelle, you go. Michelle, you go.
Well, I guess to follow up that, another listener question was, how do you develop that range?
Well, I'm a singer. I've been singing since I was born. I've been a natural mimic since I was a kid. You know, my mother had tried to put me in show business when I was six, and I was too dark for the white folks to hire. That has luckily taken a nice change. Mimicry and voice impressions and singing. I was doing the best drunken Dean Martin at age six that anybody had ever seen.
Okay, drunken Dean Martin and wasted Iggy Pop. These are wonderful monikers. Like, I just need to be you. Like,
I think I saw a shirt once that said Pitbull on crack, and somebody described me as that as well.
Yeah, so, best monikers.
Yeah. So, so how do you get a voice? I mean, you're goofing around with them all your time as a class clown, as a kid, you know, with short attention span, as somebody who was raised on Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies and just loved all those voices. I mean, you know, I can do the entire range of Mel Blanc's characters with a few exceptions that sound a little weird. And one of them, the hardest one, is Bugs, just to say. But how do you do it? A lot of the times they give you a piece of art, you know. They showed me Cable. I went, well, the guy's not going to sound like Woody Allen, is he? You know, like, he's not just that's just not it. You get handed pictures now. Like, you know, I did Rancor. This is a bird universe kind of game thing. And he's a huge sparrow, basically, you know, with armor. I didn't know what to do with that. But it sort of came that I was kind of squawky. Ah! And I would throw those in while I was talking. And it's great to be allowed to. You're usually given some parameters, low voice, growly, gravelly, you know. But after a while, yeah, you sort of form it. And you know what you really regret is that you do like three episodes you're in there the fourth episode and they play the first one, you go, oh, I want to go back because now I know where it is. I know where that voice sits. Sometimes you get to do it, other times not.
Our next listener question is in reference to the original X-Men animated series. And someone asks, would you have liked to have seen an episode where Corsair is with his sons, Alex and Scott?
I would have thought that if you would see anything like that, it would have been in TAS because of the dynamics that they explored on that show. I would have thought it would have been a great place to do that.
And I think Larry mentioned that he eventually had wanted to do it, but you know, it was one of those ideas that were put on the back burner and never came into fruition.
Well, you gotta keep the action fans happy too. So, I mean, as much as they did involve storylines that involved family, that involved, you know, everyday workings that, you know, and everyday foibles of people that, you know, these superheroes might've had a few things in common with, I thought that was very brave of them to do. You know, in a world that wants, you know, their superheroes to be super and not flawed. I mean, we've obviously come a long way since then. All superheroes are flawed now, to the point of boredom for me sometimes. Yeah, you're flawed. Okay, move on. Knock down a building, will you? Anyway, but yeah, I would have liked to have seen it. I of course I had no word that, you know, things like that were in the offing. Would have loved to have seen it. Would have loved, you know, there's a picture out there of Cable with a baby right here and a baby holder. Have you seen that picture?
Of course, that's Baby Spalding, aka
that's
Hope
what
Summers.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, Cable Dad. I want to have that
be Daddy
baby right
Cable.
There. Yeah, just hold my ray gun, son. There we go. All right.
Yes, you are Daddy Cable. Yes, Daddy Cable.
Big Daddy Cable. I would love that. I would love
Big Daddy love Cable. Michelle and I have hard eyes now. We're like, yeah,
oh my gosh,
Daddy
yes.
Cable.
Daddy Cable.
We're sorry. We're like this
all
with
right,
everyone. We're just we just happen to be big stands.
Well, yes. I appreciate it. I'm soaking it up, man. Thank you.
Okay. Last listener question.
Okay.
Besides the characters that you have voiced, who is your favorite X-Man or lady?
Oh, I could listen to the drawl of, you know, Lenore all day.
Oh yeah.
I love Lenore's drawl. I loved all the women on X-Men. I very rarely was in ensemble with them. There was only a few times there because, you know, when the guys are out fighting, that was where Cable was, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of interplay, but we were all there, and sometimes we were watching from the engineer's booth, and you know, we'd be trading quips back and forth. But Lenore's a pleasure to watch work too. There's two different kinds of people behind a mic. I mean, there's people like Lenore and Norm Spencer who can issue that voice and stand stock still while they do it. It astonishes me because, man, I am like a guy being electrocuted behind the mic. When I talk, when I'm giving my voice, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And I'm, you know, I need this much clearance around me or your head's going to get knocked off. So to watch them pull that same action, I've always been envious of it because I think I come out of these sessions really exhausted physically, you know, and if I could apply more to the voice, maybe I wouldn't be as tired at the end or I could go longer, but watching her work and pull that magnificent voice out, that sexy, edgy, dangerous voice. So, yeah, Lenore.
Can I ask, did you ever see Catherine Disher do Jean Grey and her fainting scenes? Which we are huge Jean Grey stands here. I
know,
love
and
Jean Grey.
The orgasmic fainting scene.
Yeah. Did you ever bear witness to that?
No, I didn't hear. I didn't see it. I wasn't present when it happened because that would have been a howl. But no, I heard about it and I saw somebody. One of you put it up. There it was. It's going, sure, I can see what they're talking about there. Yeah.
I wish I was as clever as whoever that YouTuber was because.
Well, I tell you, I mean, doing impact scenes is pretty funny too. When you're going over and over again, and go, really, am I beating somebody up or is it getting a little romantic? I can't tell with the voice sometimes.
Lords, thank you so much. We are at Power of X-Men on Instagram,
and I'm at Michelle Waffle O on Instagram and Twitter. Still figuring Twitter out, but highly active on Instagram. Also, of a joint account with my husband, Adventures in Geekdom, where we chronicle our comic book and toy hunting adventures.